Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Hi, this is Chris, and this is a repeat episode of Amateur Traveler. And the reason for that is this is coming out while I'm with some of you in Morocco, in northern Morocco, on the 2024 Amateur Traveler annual trip. So I hope you enjoy this episode from the archives. Amateur Traveler, episode 713. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about walled towns and standing stones, beaches and folk festivals, pirates and U-boats, as we go to Brittany in France. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Brittany. I'd like to welcome to the show Kristen Montgomery from growingglobalcitizens.com, who's come to talk to us about the region of France known as Brittany. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
And I want to say the Duchy of Brittany, but that's really not the term anymore. So,
no, it's not. It's definitely part of France officially.
Where are we talking about?
So Brittany is located in northwestern France, and as you said, it used to be a duchy, but in the 1500s, it was incorporated as part of France, basically taken over against their will. So there's still a very strong regional identity. There are some people that still identify as being Breton before they're French.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Brittany?
Well, Brittany is a place that is not usually on lots of travelers' lists. Obviously, if you're going to head to France, you think of Paris, you think of southern France, Provence, or Nice. But there are a lot of really great things to see in Brittany, in Brittany. There are beautiful beaches, first of all, and it's actually sand beaches, unlike the rocky beaches that you find down south. Uh-huh. It's a great place for a multi-generational trip. So if you're traveling with family, it would be an excellent place to visit because it's a little bit less touristy, less crowded. There are more things to do that are in small towns out in the country. And it has this Celtic identity, like I said, the Breton identity, that really is not found in any other place in France. And so you're going to be hearing things like bagpipes for music. You're going to be seeing traditional dancing, even some of the Breton language. And I found that people here were really very, very friendly, which is something that, you know, I hate to say, but sometimes in other parts of France, especially you think of Paris, they don't really have the reputation of being very friendly. But people here really took the time to be able to chat. And if you're someone that likes history or is into myths and legend, Brittany has a lot of that too.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
So I would recommend starting in Rennes. Rennes is in the eastern part of Brittany. And you can fly in or you can take the train, the TGV, from Paris. It's about an hour and 45 minutes. There are international flights into Rennes from other places in Europe, but I don't think there are any from the U.S. or from North America directly. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for a place that would have more connections, that would be a bigger city, you can also fly into Nantes, which is farther south. And Nantes officially right now is no longer part of Brittany in the administrative region, but it was part of that duchy. And there is quite a bit to see there too. So I won't talk about that today, but that's another option if you want more connections.
Okay.
And so for the itinerary, like I said, you're going to start in Rennes, and then most of the things to see are along the coast. So you're basically going to do a clockwise circle, and you can go all the way around following the coast and then get back to Rennes.
Okay. Excellent. Well, let's jump in a little more detail. What are we going to do in Rennes before we head to the coast?
Okay, so Rennes is the cultural capital of Brittany. It's a university town, and it's really easy to get around. I will mention that you're going to want to rent a car to be able to do this trip, because there are a lot of small towns that you're going to want to be able to go in and out of. Mm-hmm. But when you're in Rennes itself, you don't need a car. They actually have a great metro, and it's the smallest city in France to have a metro. And this one is driverless also. So it goes both underground and above ground. And it was really clean and safe and efficient. So that was something that I didn't really expect, but it was a very pleasant surprise. So Rennes is known for its half-timbered houses.
Which is funny, because that really, I think we're on the other end of France over in Alsace-Lorraine or something like that when I see the half-timbered houses.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm, that part of France, and then Germany too, mm-hmm. are places where you usually think of those. But it's very much native to the architecture here, and I believe it's done in a slightly different way, but I'm not positive about that. But the half-timbered houses are usually, the first level is stone, and then on top of that, there are usually three or four other levels that have these big pieces of wood, and then mm-hmm. they have kind of plaster or mud in between them. And they're all different colors. And so when you see them all together, for example, in Place Sainte-Anne, it's a big square where you can see this architecture in Rennes. And some of these are incredibly old. They're dating from like the 15th to 17th century, all the way back in the Middle Ages.
Incredibly old by American standards is what you're
saying. Exactly. Yes. Thank you. Yes, it's all relative. Actually, in Rennes, there are kind of pockets of these. Mm-hmm. And the reason there aren't more is because, like in many other places, there was a big fire mm-hmm. in 1720. And so many of them were destroyed. And so part of the town has this much older architecture, and then part of the town has more modern architecture.
Got it.
And another thing you're going to want to see is the Breton Parliament building. And like I said, Rennes is kind of the capital of Brittany. And so this parliament building originally had a little bit more autonomy than it does now. Now it's really part of France, but they still do some court cases here. It's basically a court of appeals.
Okay.
The architecture that's there is beautiful, especially the Grande Chambre. They have paintings and tapestries in there. It's all gold leaf, I believe.
The large chamber, the Grand
yes.
Chambre. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
It sounds so much better in French, like so many things. Harder to spell, but sounds so much better.
Yes, thank you. You'll have to stop me. I'm a French teacher too, and so when I pronounce things, I don't know, I have to say the French pronunciation.
I've been enjoying your French pronunciation. I am sure it is better than mine. So
so the Parliament actually has an interesting history too, because you know, before I talked about how it used to be the court and have a bigger role, but in 1994, there was actually a fire, and it was caused, unfortunately, by some protests from the fishermen, mm-hmm. and they had come to Rennes, and there were, I think, some fireworks or some flares, and something was accidentally lodged in the roof, and nobody noticed it for a few hours, and so by the time the fire alarm sounded, and they realized that it was indeed a fire and not a false alarm, most of the building was destroyed.
Mm.
But they did a great job of rebuilding it, and looking at it today, you would never guess that that had happened.
Got it. Now, you were able to tour the building, or it's just open to the public?
You are able to tour. We did a guided tour, mm-hmm. and I would definitely recommend that. I think it does need to be a guided tour.
Okay.
You go through security, and then they need to know who's in the building and everything.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Make sure you're not a fisherman.
Exactly. And during the summer, they have a special light and music show that actually takes place outside. And in front of the building, there's a big square. It's late at night. I think it was 11 o'clock at night, partly because the sun seems to set a little bit later. So, of course, it needs to be dark for the show.
Uh-huh.
And they projected lights and projected kind of like a movie, but it was made to match the Parliament building. So you would see like children climbing up the buildings or like the windows opening. Hmm. And it was a very, very cool experience. Like I said, every night it's free. I would definitely recommend seeing that.
Okay.
And then if you are interested in history, the Brittany Museum and Cultural Center has an interesting museum that has some archaeological pieces, some traditional clothing, and information about basically the history of Brittany. And I remember one exhibit there that was especially good was with 3D goggles. So if you're into that kind of technology, they did have some very cool new technology exhibits.
Excellent. Well, being both a technology geek and a history geek, you know I am.
Yeah. If you are there on a Saturday, there is a Saturday market, and it's in a place called the Place des Lys, which is a place that got its name. It's this big open area, and it got its name because they used to hold jousts there in medieval times.
Place of the lists. Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They have the market, which I believe is like the second biggest, or certainly one of the biggest in France.
Hmm.
So obviously, in terms of food, you can buy things like seafood and berries and all sorts of summer foods.
Okay.
The next place I would take you, because of course you're in France, and so like I said, food is very important.
Of course.
Yes, there is a chocolate shop that's called Chocolatier Durand, so Durand. Mm-hmm. And the chocolates here are very interesting because they all have numbers painted on them. So you order your chocolate by number. But the real thing that's interesting is the cake. And they have a cake called Gâteau Jégadot, which is named for a woman named Hélène Jégadot. And she was one of the first, or she was the first, I guess, French serial killer.
Oh, no.
Yes. So very unexpected. And the story goes that she was from Brittany and she was a cook. And when she had someone she didn't like, she would poison them with arsenic, either in soup or in this cake. And by the time people figured out what was happening, she had poisoned, I think it was dozens of people, and they're not really sure exactly how many. I've seen 25, I've seen 30, but certainly dozens of people.
Huh.
So if you're interested in crime and that kind of thing, you can go and order this cake. It makes a great gift. It actually tells
the whole
story.
Now sold without the poison.
Exactly. They do say specifically on there that it's guaranteed without arsenic, arsenic free.
good.
Yes. Reassuring, definitely.
That's funny.
And while we're talking about Rennes, one of the events that I got to attend there was called a Fest Noz. And it is this traditional, basically outdoor party. It means night festival in the Breton language. And they happen all over Brittany. The one that I went to in Rennes, it was, I think, four different Wednesdays in a row. But they had different groups that came every time. It was held outdoors in the park. And it was really just an amazing way to see the Breton culture. And there were sports and games.
Mm-hmm.
So there was like wrestling. So kids got to try the traditional Breton wrestling. There was food for sale. They had bands playing on this big stage. And then they had performers dancing. And mm-hmm. everyone would get up and dance also. So it was very cool to see just people of all ages, very family friendly, coming and dancing and just celebrating their culture.
And from what I see, the dances tend to be a circle or a chain dance?
Yes.
Okay.
So most of the dances are not couple dances, which is always great because it's also great because it's very inclusive. Anybody can just mm-hmm. jump in and join. And you're usually either locking elbows, or there are some where you actually stick up your pinky fingers and you lock pinky fingers.
Okay.
And so then you're either going around in a circle or going around in a chain.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're outside, you know, you have hundreds of people dancing together. It's really something that's very cool to see.
Excellent. And my impression from something you said is you were there with your kids.
I was there with my students.
Your students?
And actually not at this one.
Okay.
Yeah, so I went to Rennes for the first time actually about 10 years ago with my parents. But then this time I was working with students. I was a program leader for a study abroad program with high school students.
Interesting. Now and I'm curious, being a French teacher going to Brittany, is the French similar enough to high school French that there wasn't a problem for your students to communicate?
Yes, absolutely. Of course, there are very, very small regional dialects, but I really didn't even notice anything that was much different in terms of the French that's spoken there. There are actually two other languages that are still living languages in Brittany. One is called Gallo, which is spoken more in the eastern part. Okay. And that's actually like a Romance language, so similar to French or Spanish or Italian. And then the Breton language, which is a Celtic language, so it's somewhat, I believe, understandable for someone that would speak Irish or Scottish. And so that was definitely visible in signs, but it's not something that you really hear people speaking on the street.
Okay.
But they are trying to revive that language. So at this Fest Noz, being a language nerd, I definitely talked to some people that were there that were promoting schools. So they have some immersion schools where you can do classes in Breton.
Got it. ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. Anything else we want to do in Rennes?
That should be it for Rennes. So after that, you're going to head out. You're going to take your car. And if you didn't get a chance to go to the Fest Noz, as I mentioned, there were games there. Mm-hmm. And the organization that was sponsoring those games is actually a theme park, I guess you could call it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, about 30 miles outside of Rennes, there is a park and they have all traditional Breton games. So the technology is only like things that existed a few hundred years ago. So it's games like lawn bowling and mazes and things with wooden clubs or jousting. So they have things that are indoors and they have things that are outdoors. And so that's a fun chance to do something that you probably wouldn't do at home.
And what is the name of the park?
It's called Parc Carouge, I believe. C-A-R-O-U-J.
All right.
Keeping in that same theme, pretty close to that park is the Broceliande Forest. And legend has it that this was the forest where the Knights of the Round Table and King Arthur and Merlin were at one point in time, which I didn't realize this. Everybody knows King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table mm-hmm. and the Sword and the Stone, but I had no idea that it actually, of course, that's a legend, but they say it took place here. So
they say the Cornish say it took place over there. So
right,
there may
right,
be a couple
exactly.
different places that it, that claim
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So they either cross the sea or, you know, obviously
right.
legend has it. But if you're into that type of mythology or history, you can also go and see what is supposedly Merlin's tomb in
okay.
this forest. And some of the forests or some of the trees are just huge. And I think they have one that's about 1,000 years old.
Okay.
And so then your next stop is going to be down a little bit farther south to a place called Karnak. And it's good timing because you just saw the legends, or you just heard about the legends in the forest of King Arthur. And in Karnak, it's a site that has 3,000 stones that are megaliths. So some of these stones are fairly small, like say waist high, and some of them might be 10 or 15 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And they're generally placed vertically, and they're an alignment. They have multiple rows, and they're actually three different fields of these rows. They're not sure if it used to be just one giant section or if they built three separate fields.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, which happens all the time, there are more standing stones in Brittany than there are, for instance, the well-known ones we know of, like Stonehenge and Avebury in England. More than 3,000.
Ah, well, yeah, I don't know. I know it's more than 3,000 around Karnak, and there are definitely other places besides mm-hmm. just Karnak that have these stones. So
that's just Karnak that has more than 3,000. Wow.
That's just
okay.
Karnak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a big area.
Hmm.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Not as large as Stonehenge in terms of the stones themselves. Yeah.
And because they're not vertical, you know, the ones in Stonehenge are, I think, what they call dolmens. So you have mm-hmm. the two stones with
right.
the flat stone over the top. And so it's maybe not as visually striking as Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the sheer size of these fields, it's pretty impressive.
Hmm. Interesting.
And again, these were invented, or these were not invented, but constructed, put up about 7,000 years ago. So... And again, they don't know exactly when. They've only been able to do carbon dating with a few parts of it, but
mm-hmm.
before the wheel. So when you think that they have managed to put these huge stones on their end, it's very impressive.
Hmm. I'm just looking at pictures. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I get distracted.
It's hard to describe because it is, like I said, it's very impressive, but also like...
It looks like somebody's trying to, some farmer's trying to sow a crop of stone.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yep. Yep, with furrows. And there are some dolmens there. And there's mm-hmm. also a tomb, kind of like an effigy mound tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go, and if you have a car, you can, I believe, drive by these because they're kind of all over town. And in fact, there are some areas where it's like the person's backyard fence is made of these stones.
Okay.
But certainly if you're going to bother to go down there, it's worth doing a guided visit in the summer. They have a little visitor center, and then you can learn about the theories behind them because there are lots of different theories about
sure.
what they were actually created for.
Hmm. Excellent. Where to next?
All right. So after that, you're going to head to a city called Lorient, and there is a sailing museum there. So if you're someone that's really into sailing, this would be the place to go. Sailing and boating, obviously, very popular in Brittany. But at this sailing museum, you can try out little remote control sailboats. You can have a contest to see who can hoist the sail fastest. And I'm not into sailing, so I can't speak to who the famous sailors are, but there were definitely famous sailors there. So,
well, and you say that sailing is, of course, popular there. One thing we probably should have said but didn't is that we're talking about a peninsula. So there is water on almost all sides, except if you head back towards Paris, then there's no water in that direction.
Yes, very good point. And... in Lorient, there are also some German submarines, I believe, because the Germans were there building submarines during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your place to go if you're into boats, and they do, I believe, have sailing lessons and different cruises and things from there, too.
Got it. Okay. Submarine pen, or I think is the correct term there, but Don't hold me to that.
After you've seen that, you're going to head to a small town that's called Ponaven. And it literally means the bridge over the Avon River.
Okay.
And this is a spot that has, it used to have a number of windmills. And it's just a very picturesque little town. It was a spot that was popular with Impressionist painters. And Paul Gauguin spent a lot of time there.
Now, you say used to have a lot of windmills. So we're going there to see the windmills that aren't there anymore.
Well, there, I think there used to be a much bigger number. There are a couple. I'm not sure if they're actually, I don't think they'd be working windmills. Mm-hmm. But for example, there's a restaurant that you can eat at that has, it's basically been built around this windmill. And so the windmill or parts of it are within the restaurant. So that's still a kind of an important part of the culture there.
Got it. Well, and it looks like there is an art museum there, which I suspect is going to display some of the artists who visited.
Yep, absolutely right. The Fine Arts Museum there is a good place to see Impressionist paintings and work from Gauguin. And the other thing that's great about this town is it's known for its cookies.
Oh, well, now you have me. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it's going to be a choice between cookies or art, I'm definitely going to go for the cookies every time. So the cookies, when I say cookies, it's really more like a biscuit, like a shortbread cookie.
Okay. That works for me. That's fine.
Yep. Still very good. There are factories where you can see them made, and then there are a number of stores that sell them, and they have free samples too. So it's a good place to pick up, tins of cookies as souvenirs.
And that's Tromad?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe there are a couple different companies actually now. There's competitors once you have the main one.
We'll just have to do some taste testing to see which
is the best. Right. I guess I'll take a minute while we're mentioning cookies and talk about some food there. Mm-hmm. So the cookies and basically any baked good in Brittany is extremely buttery. So the butter is one of the famous products in Brittany, salted butter.
Okay.
And, you wouldn't think that is that exciting, but I have to admit, as someone from Wisconsin, which is the dairy state.
Sure.
I'm going to get a lot of crap for this, but the butter in Brittany was definitely better than the butter in Wisconsin. And so that really plays a huge role in most of their baking. And so the cakes are very, very heavy and very buttery.
Okay. Well, and the other thing I think of when I think of food in Brittany is the galette.
Exactly. Yes. So galette is very similar to a crepe, but mm-hmm. it's buckwheat. And so it's more of a savory, whereas a crepe is usually sweet and you're going to put Nutella or jam butter and sugar in it. So the galette, it usually has either egg or cheese or ham or some combination of that.
Well, nowadays you can get them all over France, but this is where they're from.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is definitely the place to go if you want to have galette. And along with that, you'll probably want something to drink. And the drink is cider,
mm-hmm.
made from apples, alcoholic cider. Although there are lots of different versions of juice and cider that's alcoholic and non-alcoholic. They kind of compete with Normandy.
I was going to say that, yes.
There's some competition or there's some hard feelings there. But certainly the cider that I had in Brittany was very good.
Now, in Normandy, they're also known for their hard ciders into the alcohols made in distilled, for instance, out of apples. Is that as common in Brittany as well?
Would that be like the Calvados?
Yes, exactly.
Like that? Okay, yeah. I didn't see that really in Brittany. That's okay. Not to say that it isn't there, but certainly not as much as I saw in Normandy.
Okay. Yeah, it seemed to be more prevalent there, or it seemed to be prevalent there. I shouldn't say more prevalent because I have not been to Brittany.
All right, so let's see. We were at Ponaven. So after that, a good spot to kind of call a base in the western end, if you're not someone that likes to spend every night in a different place, you can spend most of your time on the western end in Quimper.
Well, And just to put some scale on it, eastern end to western end, about 100 miles-ish, I'm saying.
Yeah.
A little longer on the
road.
2.5 hours,
yeah. Probably. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to get there. I mean, if you wanted to, you could do this whole thing and just spend half the time in Wren and half the time in Camp Air. No problem. But then you would miss some very cute places to stay. So obviously it depends on what you like in your travel style. But Camp Air also has the half-timbered houses, beautiful architecture, probably even more so than Wren. And their cathedral is also gorgeous. They also have kind of a county museum. It's called the Musée Départemental Camp Air. And there they have different exhibits having to do with the archaeology of Britain. They have paintings, traditional dress exhibits. And there is a festival there that happens every year, the Festival Cornouailles. We can put that in the show notes. And that's another one that I would highly recommend. If you're planning your trip to Brittany, try to go when some of these festivals are happening, because it's really probably, the best time for you to be able to see what the culture and the traditions really are.
And I forgot to ask when we were talking about the festival before back in Wren, are we talking about a summer festival?
Yes. Well, so I know there are festivals that happen kind of all during the year.
Okay.
But the one that was in Wren, this more famous one at this park, was 4 consecutive Wednesdays in July.
Okay. And then the one here in Camp Air is what time of year?
It was also July.
Okay.
But it was more of a weekend festival.
Got it.
But like I said, there are festivals that may be more of like concert series that happen in other places during the year.
Okay.
And part of that is because it doesn't really get very cold in Brittany. It's kind of like English weather, very rainy, but it's pretty mild. So there's not really snow usually.
Okay. Yeah. When you were talking about the beaches or sandy, I thought, yes, but the sun is in the south. The sun and the rocks in the south or the sandy beaches and the gloom in Brittany, and take your choice.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, when I was there, and maybe it was just a fluke thing, but I was there most of July and part of August, and we actually had great weather. It was quite sunny. So like I said, it may have just been a fluke. I know that the major rainy seasons are really more like winter and spring.
Okay.
So it was definitely beach weather in July and August.
Got it. Where to next?
All right. So next, after Camp Air, there is another small town that is worth a stop that's called Locronan, and it's famous for being a religious pilgrimage site. So the cathedral there is beautiful, but honestly, the biggest draw is just seeing the town, because all of the buildings are made out of stone, and they have the slate roofs, and they have these beautiful hydrangeas everywhere. And so just the colors of the purples and the pinks and everything is really gorgeous. So again, these are not places you're going to spend like the whole day, but if you're driving through, it's a great place for lunch. It's a great place to go shopping, get some souvenirs, and take some pictures.
Got it.
If you've had enough of smaller towns and shopping, there is a national or a regional park called Armorique, and it covers a pretty big area. So now we're talking Finisterre, which is the westernmost point. And so kind of all around this region, they have paths that you can walk on. And actually, a lot of these paths were originally created to track down or prevent smugglers. So the ships coming in.
Okay.
So they still have these paths. So the rock formations here are also very interesting. So you have some of the big cliffs like you might have in Ireland, for example. And you have some of the rock formations where, like, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like the Giant Steps or something like that in Northern Ireland, where you have
Giant's Causeway?
Giant's Causeway, yes.
Basalt columns?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, something similar to that. So you have these columns that are all kind of stacked up, and then they've been put up vertically.
Okay.
For thousands of years.
Volcanic formations. Interesting.
I would assume, I don't know enough about geology to say if it's volcanic or not, but definitely granite.
Okay.
Let's see. So that is your area for hiking, or if you're someone that wants to go camping, that's a very popular area, is to do it along the coast here in in that park. And other rock formations, if you go a little bit farther north, not completely northwest, but a little bit more northeast up on the coast, they actually have some pink granite formations that are really interesting. As you can tell, I'm not a rock person, but
it's okay. When we get Gary Arndt on, who is a geologist, study geology. He'll talk about the rocks. You can talk about the French. That's okay. Completely acceptable.
Perfect. Well, I guess the point is, if I, who have kind of no appreciation for geology, can still find these interesting, then I think the average person probably would. So yeah, so you can see these pink granite rocks, again, kind of worth a drive from where you are. And a lot of lighthouses are in this area too.
Okay. Well, and just to clarify, they are in fact volcanic formations, and they're granite plutons.
Okay.
Or plutons. I'm not sure whether I'm going for a French word there or an English word.
Okay, good to know.
While I'm interrupting, I was talking about sunny in the south and a more like England's weather. About 400 more hours of sunshine a year than London gets on average.
Really?
In Brittany, and about 1,000 less than Marseille gets, which is the sunniest part of France. Oof. So about 1,800 hours of sunshine a year. So you can compare that to your local weather and decide whether you think that's sunny if you live in Portland, or whether you think that is overcast if you live in San Jose, California, like I do.
That's true. It's definitely all relative.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. So one more stop as you're heading back. You're almost back to the eastern end now. You're going to stop at a small town called Dinan. And this place has a bridge that is very, very tall. That's actually kind of crossing a river and a bit of almost a ravine. Uh-huh. And it's got a small port on the river. And so it's a really picturesque town. It was a town that was actually liberated by the Americans in World War II also. So there's some interesting history there. It has one of the steepest roads that I've ever walked up. I guess you actually couldn't really call it a road. It's like a cobblestone street. But all along the street are the half-timbered houses that you've seen in other places. Mm-hmm. These all have different shops for different artists. So there's a lot of good shopping here. You can also rent kayaks and do some water sports or cruises on the river.
Excellent. Well, and when we talked about where we are in France, we mentioned that we're in that northeast corner. When you're in Dinan, you're almost back into Normandy. So, for instance, we've done shows on Normandy. If you wanted to combine this with a trip to Normandy, that would be very natural because you're about as close to Mont Saint-Michel, which is on the border of Normandy, as you are to get back to Rennes. So again, fairly close that way. The other place that would make sense to combine it with is if you went south, for instance, from here, or if you came into Nantes, as you talked about, then you could head down towards La Rochelle, which we've talked about, or some of the areas down that way, if you're doing this as part of a larger trip.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is quite close to everything. That's one of the nice things with France, and especially with the good train transportation.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite easy to do multiple parts of this. And honestly, a week would definitely give you plenty of time to really feel like you've seen Brittany, just because it's a small enough area.
Well, and a week in this area, you're not going to be spending the entire time in the car.
Right.
You can do 5 hours of driving spread over a week and then get a chance to enjoy the place. So that would be a nice pace, I think, for this area.
Yeah. And I think another thing, I can't remember if I mentioned this at the beginning or not, but it's really not touristy. So you're not going to have these giant tourist crowds at every place that you go like you would in Paris or in other places down south. So that makes it a lot more enjoyable.
Right. Or in Normandy, which I was pushing you up that way. Then you're going to see the tourist crowds at Mont Saint-Michel or the Normandy beaches. Yes, exactly.
All right. So the last place that you must see, this is, highly recommended, probably my favorite spot, is the city of Saint-Malo, or Saint-Malo. And it's a pirate city. So it has a very cool history. The height of the city was like in the 1700s. Okay. And it was a very wealthy city because it was a port city. And so they had all these merchants that were trading. And it's actually the home of a lot of maritime explorers. So Jacques Cartier, who I'm sure you've heard of, who explored and settled in Canada. So it has this very strong history. And I talked before, I think, about how Brittany has a very strong regional identity. And many people say that they consider themselves to be Breton before they consider themselves to be French, which doesn't seem to happen in many other regions in France, maybe in Alsace. But in Saint-Malo, they're motto is actually, I'm not Briton, I'm not French, I'm from Saint-Malo.
Now, I think that this was the point in the itinerary that you sent me that I thought we had to do this episode, because especially as a history buff, we're talking about a walled town that has retained its medieval wall right on the beach, right on the coast. It was a place that I saw a picture of and thought, I have to go there.
Yes. Yes, it's very, very unique. You can walk all around the walls, which is cool because there are a lot of walled cities in Brittany, but in many of them, you can't go up on the walls. So here you can. On one side, you have the views overlooking the city of these walls. And then on the other side, you have the view all the way out to sea of the English Channel. And it's very striking architecture because, of course, all the buildings are stone. And then with the sea and the tides, and it's this way kind of at Mont-Saint-Michel too, is it's very, very shallow. So when the tide goes out, it's actually beach for, I don't know, like it seemed like half a mile.
Okay.
But when it's high tide, the water will come in pretty much all the way to the walls.
Well, and as you mentioned, we are right on the English Channel too. So if you get tired of Saint-Malo, and I'm not sure why you would, you can quickly hop on a ferry and go to Portsmouth, for instance, that we talked about last week. So, or one of several other places.
Yeah.
Plymouth, sorry, which we talked about last week, or Portsmouth.
Yeah, you can definitely combine this with many other trips.
Right, exactly.
So as you said, you like history. And so, well, actually, let me say one thing first while we're talking about the shallowness of the beaches. So one of the problems that this caused was the fact that if ships were in port, or even if they were farther out and had their anchors down, when the tide went out, you could basically access those ships on foot. And that could be problematic because obviously these are very wealthy ships with a lot of important merchandise. And just being, you know, a big town with trade and people from lots of different places, there was the potential for crime. So one of the things that they did was they had a curfew. And so they would have a bell that was rung every night at, I think it was 10 o'clock. And everyone would hurry home. And those people that were within the walled city after curfew would be put in prison, which is pretty strict. But it's better, at least, if you're found within the walls, because if you were found outside of the walled city, they had these gigantic dogs, these mastiff dogs, which are like 5 feet tall. I think they're one of the biggest breeds of dogs. And they would set the dogs upon you if you were found outside of the city. Yeah. And so, you know, when I heard this from our guide, I kind of thought, oh, sure, you know, I'm sure that's been embellished a little bit. But then later I saw the coat of arms for Saint-Malo, and they actually have these giant mastiff dogs on the coat of arms. So this was definitely a thing.
Now, these days, I can stay at an old inn there, and I don't have to worry about being in by 10 o'clock, I'm assuming.
I think you'll be safe, Chris, yes.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah, it's a very popular tourist town now. Mostly French tourists, but there were definitely some British tourists there too. And one of the things that you should definitely see if you're interested in this privateer, this pirate history, is a place that's a mansion of a merchant or privateer family. It's called La Demeure de Corsaire. And the man that's our guide, I found out later, Monsieur Olivier, he actually is the proprietor. His family owns this building. And so he told in a very eccentric way all about the privateer history. And a privateer was
not a pirate.
Not a pirate, exactly.
Although technically many of them became pirates off and on, but yeah.
Yes, yeah, I read that they seemed to like afterwards, you know, doing the plundering, and so they ended up no longer working for the king, and they became full-time pirates.
Yeah, but the king's pirate is a privateer. They have letters of marque, I want to say. Exactly. I don't know if I'm using the right term.
It. Okay. Yep. So this was very common because you would have the king that would want people to fight. He would want a navy. And so you would have tradesmen, merchants that had their ships and had their crews. Mm-hmm. And so they would get paid very well to be able to fight for the king. But like you said, they had to have this letter. What would happen is if there were two like privateer ships fighting, the goal wasn't necessarily to sink the other ship.
No.
It was actually to capture the other ship's flag, which makes sense.
Well, it was to capture the other ship.
Right, right.
And sell it.
not like the game. But,
no, not like, not like the game, yeah.
Once they had the flag, that was kind of officially when they would say, okay, yes, we surrender because you've taken our flag. And so they would be able to then, you know, plunder and take the goods from that ship. And if you were a privateer and you were captured, you'd be considered a prisoner of war and, you know, you'd go to prison for a little bit. But if you, for some reason, did not have that letter, that official authorization from the king to be fighting, then you would be treated like a pirate and then you would be hung. So that document was very important to keep on hand.
Right. And I have someone who loves history, so I've read a history of pirates, for instance, in the Caribbean and in the southern United States and such, too. And it is interesting how privateers and pirates, there was sometimes that, you know, if you think about a time period where news travels slowly, sometimes you're a privateer in a war and the war is over. And news has not reached you yet. And so there were sometimes that people would slip into piracy, or there were sometimes that people would just stay in piracy and would ignore the fact that the war was over because they were making a good living from it. And many of the pirates that we know, if you are familiar with historic pirates, were at one time privateers, but not all.
Yeah, I think Francis Drake was one of the most famous ones, correct?
Yep, definitely. Excellent. And that wraps up your itinerary. Anything else before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
Let's see. I guess the one other thing that would be good to see in Saint-Malo, but again, you can see this in many places, is there is a place where they're making quinamon, which is this butter cake. And it's another one of the quintessential things that you have to try when you're in Saint-Malo. And you can actually see it being made, which actually in a way makes you want to eat it less just because they have the dough and then they literally put on a gigantic slab of butter and then they have a machine that just folds the dough over and over and over. So you end up with these very thin layers, very thin buttery layers made into a cake that's round. And so it tastes amazing, but certainly not good for you. And there was another restaurant in Saint-Malo that was very interesting too, that was a version of Breton food, but with a Japanese twist.
Okay.
So for example, the group that I was with, we got galette, so the crepes, but then it was cut up and it was done in like a sushi style. So there are some very unique restaurants if you're a foodie.
And do you happen to remember the name of your Breton sushi restaurant?
It was the Bretz Cafe. So Bretz is the name of Brittany in the Breton language.
Okay.
And I guess the founder actually had lived in Japan. So they have some very interesting things. And speaking of Bretz, another thing that you'll see in stores that's very popular is the Breton version of Coca-Cola, which is called Bretz Cola.
Okay. A local cola.
A local cola. Mm-hmm.
Got it. If we think of Brittany, and I told you were standing in the prettiest spot in Brittany, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think it would have to be on the walls of Saint-Malo.
Okay.
Overlooking the ocean, you can see the fort. Lorraine in the distance and just seeing everyone enjoying the beach, hopefully on a sunny day.
Excellent. Well, and you mentioned beaches. Is this your favorite beach in Brittany or is there another?
I think it is. It's one of the biggest.
Okay.
There are other places like Concarneau. If you want a beach where you're going to be the only person, then, I mean, you can easily find that anywhere. But if you're looking for more of a traditional beach, I think Saint-Malo would be the place to go.
Got it. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Brittany.
I think one of the teachers that we worked with would always be saying how she was Breton, je suis Breton, and just kind of like, hey, well, I'm Breton, like I say it like it is. That's how it goes. So I think just that always made me giggle and just kind of think about the Breton identity.
It's funny. I think before we did this show, the only city that I could think of in Brittany is Brest, and that's one you didn't mention, and way out there on the end of the peninsula.
Yeah, it's one that I didn't go to.
Okay.
And I know they do have some lighthouses and mm-hmm. I think a naval base there that's very big. But yeah, I don't know too much about that one. But it is another one on the coast that's yep. quite famous.
Well, and also with an old harbor and with World War II history as well, because that's also where some U-boats were kept.
Oh, okay.
Because they would be closest to the shipping lanes there, which is where they wanted them to be. Excellent. Anything else that you think people should know before they go to Brittany?
You will see a lot of flags. The flag mm-hmm. of Brittany is white and black striped. Yeah, I think just come with an open mind, come ready to dance and listen to some music and yeah.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Kristen Montgomery from growingglobalcitizens.com. And Kristen, if we wanted to send people to your website, do you have any posts on Brittany we should send them to?
I do. I currently have one on Saint-Malo and mm-hmm. one on day trips that you can do. Like small town day trips. And then there'll be another one up soon with videos and more details about the Fest-Noz and the traditional dancing.
Terrific. And we'll send me those links when you have them and I'll put them in the show notes as well.
Will do.
Kristen, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Brittany.
Thank you, Chris.
In news of the community, I'd like to thank all the patrons who support the show, especially those who came and hung out with me last Saturday when we did a Zoom call. And I'd also like to send out a special thanks to two new patrons. One is Lowell Johnson, and Lowell wrote and said, I've been listening to your podcast for a few years and have enjoyed them. Over the last 3 years, I have been to Japan, Peru, Italy, and China. It was great to review your podcast of all these countries before I went to the countries. I will be traveling hopefully to Bhutan this year and Tanzania next year. It is the joy of my week to listen to your podcast, Lowell. Thanks so much, Lowell. And then also special thanks go out to David from Life in Norway, who was a guest on the show talking about the Lofoten Peninsula. And thanks so much, David, as well. I also heard this week from Amy writing about the Devon and Cornwall episode. It was great to hear the Devon and Cornwall episode. I grew up not far from Plymouth, and there are many great things to do here. One thing not mentioned that I would highly recommend is getting the train in Devon and Cornwall. The trains travel right on the coastline, and you can see some brilliant views. Once the train track even washed away in Devon, don't worry about it. It's been rebuilt since then, and Amy has put in a link to that that I'll put in the show notes. Another thing I would mention is that it is the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower Pilgrimage. This has obviously been postponed, but is worth looking at the website for details as there are some brilliant events planned for Plymouth, UK, and Plymouth, Massachusetts. Thanks so much, Amy. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions or comments like Amy did, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit and watch.